Welcome back to this week's edition of the Midweek Reality Check with Michael Pinto, where I try to keep Wall Street and your money real.
2025 promises to be one of the most, if not the most, important year in my investment career that spans 34 years as being a licensed professional in this business. First of all, the housing market remains frozen and the thickness of the ice is deepening. In the week before the end of this year, of last year, 2024, applications to purchase a home fell 17% from the comparable week in the year ago period. In fact, mortgage rates last week moved higher for the fourth week in a row to a high of 7%. Applications for a mortgage, new purchase, for a new home, fell 7% from the start of January and were 15% lower than the same week 1 year ago. Buyers are disappearing. Even from the frozen condition that they were in a year ago period. Just as inventory is spiking, especially in the Sun Belt, lower prices are virtually guaranteed to happen. That's one part of the puzzle. Rising rates are not only hurting the housing market, but also those 60-40 stock and bond portfolios. Now, it's true that equities had a pretty good year last year, a solid year last year, but long-duration bonds are in the second most brutal bear market ever. The longest-duration Treasury bond ETF called Zero Coupon Bonds, ZROZ, has lost 50% of its value over the past 5 years and 20% alone in just last year. Now, such losses incurred in a weighting that is 40% of your 60-40 portfolio. And if that's the case, it's going to take a huge bite out of the equity appreciation seen in the past 2 years. If you have a 60-40 portfolio, and as you get older, it switches. It's 40-60. And 30-70. So if more than half of your portfolio is down more than 50% over the past 5 years, you've taken almost all of your equity gains and thrown them in the toilet if you have a balanced portfolio. And that is why it's imperative to know what part of the yield curve to invest in. Now, Pinto Portfolio Strategies has been long bonds, true, but only on the short end of the yield curve. It's a great call. Our holding of the SHY ETF, which is the ownership of 1 to 3 year treasury bills and notes, was unchanged last year. That means we not only kept 100% of the yield, we also did not have the bond sleeve eat into the gains made on the equity portion of the investments. Now, we turned more cautious and conservative with our investments in late 2024, just at the end. And that continues to be the case as we enter 2025, with only a slightly net long positioning in our inflation, deflation, and economic cycle portfolio. Whereas we believe the market will experience choppy trading for the immediate future, and that's exactly what happened with the S&P being down so far this year, it is also true that I don't think it's going to imminently crash. But it's definitely true that we're not going to immediately bark on a major new leg in the bull market. That's out of the question, in my belief. But there is good reason for my caution. And this goes beyond the incredibly overvalued condition of the equity market. Indeed, the bullish sentiment is extreme. There are now 100 times more assets in leveraged long funds than leveraged short funds. Over the last 8 weeks, this ratio has doubled, exceeding the record high set in December of 2021. This is according to the Kobayashi letter. The last time this happened was December of 2021, and the stock market proceeded to drop by 22% in the following year. And perhaps that's why you don't see a lot of margin interest, spiking margin interest on the NYSE, because why borrow money on margin when you can just buy leveraged ETFs? It's a lot cheaper. Rising rates are easier. Rising rates are the predominant problem facing markets in 2025. Spiking yields combined with the work from home phenomenon have really hurt the market for commercial mortgage-backed securities. The delinquency rate on CMBS for offices jumped to a record 11%. I'm sure that's great news for those banks who are choking on bundled pools of these assets. Just wait until the recession comes, and it is going to come. And defaults spike on residential mortgage-backed securities, commercial mortgage-backed securities, and all those type of bank loans as well, especially collateralized loan obligations, floating rate debt, and of course the shadow banking system's darling called private credit. Rates are not just rising here in the United States. For one example, take the United Kingdom. Borrowing costs have soared to the highest level since 1998. There is particular concern brewing stagflation in the United Kingdom. Inflation has been creeping higher while the economy has been stagnating. And that's putting upward pressure on government's interest payments and the value of the equity market, just as it is here. But the major issue facing the United States is the same as it is across most of the developed world. The highest real estate values and equity valuations in history exist at the same time, while the level of global debt as a percentage of GDP is at a record. Record high asset prices, record high debt. And these dangerous conditions, which are extremely rare, record high debt, record high asset prices, exist just as interest rates are rising to levels not seen in decades in Europe and 18 years here in the United States. And this is happening as central banks are trying to push rates down. Central banks are trying to come to the rescue. Believe me, they want, even though they know damn well that the battle with inflation is not over, they're trying to reduce borrowing costs to save the economy and the banking system. But just as they are reducing short-term interest rates, which are the rates they directly control, longer duration rates are rising rapidly. Meaning, and you'll only hear this here, the truth, central banks could be, looks like it's true, losing control of the yield curve. And the reasons are inflation and insolvency. The problem is that governments are rendered powerless to prevent the rise in yields when inflation and insolvency have become the salient issues. And I'll explain why. I mean, after all, what governments have done in the past to fix, quote unquote, fix problems in the economy, stock and bond markets, is to borrow and print money. That is all they are able to do. That's what governments do. They borrow and print money. This so-called government put has been inculcated into investors' minds for decades. I hear it. I heard it today. The Fed has your back. The government has your back. There's the Fed put and the government put. The Trump, they call it a Trump put now. But all they can do is borrow and print. Now, there are some other things, of course, they can cut taxes and reduce spending, but who's talking about reducing spending? I mean, who is really having a serious conversation about cutting the entitlement programs and defense spending? Nobody is talking about that. There's some chatter from Doge about being more efficient, but those are pennies. There's no real savings there. And all the other things they're talking about, like, you know, slashing taxes across the board, even extending the Trump tax cuts, which I am in favor of, because it's in the long term it boosts growth, and it doesn't, and believe it or not, it actually increases revenue. But in the short term, it's a big boost to deficits, at least in the short term. The economy stumbles. This is what has happened in the past. The economy stumbles and the central banks print money. A bear market arrives and the central banks print money. The housing market gets in trouble and bank assets start to falter, and a central bank prints money. The repo market freezes, print money. A global pandemic arrives, borrow and print trillions of dollars and jump into the helicopters. Helicopter money for everybody. But what happens when governments are already choking on debt and inflation fears are fresh in the minds of the bond vigilantes, causing bond yields to rise? Any increase in deficit spending that is monetized by central banks at that point merely serves to validate the insolvency and intractable inflation concerns, sending borrowing costs higher, which is the exact opposite process that has been used every time in the past to remediate the issues in markets and the economy. That is the situation that exists today. When you add it all together, the time to panic is not today, not in early January of 2025. But it could lead and should lead to the best shorting opportunity since the global financial crisis. Combine that with an appropriate allocation to the correct part of the U.S. bond yield curve, and you could turn what should be a disaster for most into a period of contentment and bliss. Getting the timing as close to accurate for when to short the market is crucial. I have a back-tested algorithm that monitors financial conditions and credit spreads, and that is the best way to get the timing right. Both hands are on the wheel in 2025, and my eyes are wide open. I believe 2025 will be our watershed year.
Thank you so much for listening to this edition of The Reality Check, 5 minutes of sanity in an insane world. Please remember, if you're not already an investor with PPS, you can email me directly using mpento@pentoport.com or call the office using 732-772-9500 to get information about our portfolio services. You should also go to Amazon and order my book, The Coming Bond Market Collapse. Subscribers should contact an investment advisor before acting on any information contained in this podcast. No information on this podcast constitutes an offer to sell or buy any financial instruments or to provide any investment services. Subscribers understand there's an inherent risk in investing. PPS is a registered investment advisor.